put our tags for this?
I have no idea. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
This is a, what are we going to call it? Is it not fic?
Yeah.
It's a text message fic?
Chat fic, sort of? Text fic. Text message fic, yes. Text fic.
Yeah. Bucky Barnes, Stitchin' Bitch. As written by Rena Jenkins.
And Calicaria.
Via cell phone.
Yup.
I was somewhat disappointed by the story with the summary, Bucky is healed through the power of kittens. It didn't quite do what I wanted it to, i.e., Bucky did not start reacclimating himself to self-governance in the modern era by volunteering at a local animal shelter. Nor did he do anything with yarn. Now I want a story where Bucky needs to knit so as to increase dexterity in his new Stark model robot arm.
Tony assures him that the fingers can do it, but he's not used to moving them that way. Tony also is a dick, and also gives him gray and red yarn. Also, customized needles with little red stars on the ends. Surprisingly, Clint is a pretty good knitter. It's something he picked up as a kid in the circus, along with darning. Small kids have small fingers, and he needed to make himself useful. Thor appears one day with a gigantic bag of fancy yarn, with a fancy Angora goat yarn, and won't say where he got it from, but he's smiling. Avengers Stitchin' Bitch. Natasha won't even try. She says the only use she has for knitting needles is as weapons. Sam looks at her a little wide-eyed, and she just smiles. Darcy's decent with knitting needles, but not great. She mostly makes scarves. Lots and lots of scarves. All the scarves. Tony makes a joke about her joining them and strangling supervillains. Phil learns not to schedule meetings between 2 and 4 on Saturdays. Fury cannot believe that this is his life.
Yes!
Bucky isn't really sure how any of this happened, but he thinks, maybe, he likes it. He's still not sure what to do with himself, and he can't remember how to relate to people. But for 2 hours a week, he can sit with a group of people who take him for what and who he is, and still allow him to be in their company.
Yes! Steve is frugal with his yarn. It's hard to shake the habits of the war effort, after all. And he has a moment of cognitive dissonance for the first time Clint drags him and Bucky into Michael's. The breadth of colors, sparkles, and fibers is a sure sign that they're living in the future.
And Bucky doesn't have to say anything or do anything, except knit. He's working on a hat right now. A simple thing with soft blue yarn that slips through his metal fingers but is comforting against his skin. He's not sure what he'll do with it, really, but he ends up wearing it that winter, over his newly short hair.
Damn it, Rena, now I have feels!
As far as Steve is concerned, yarn is something you save. Even if a sweater is unsalvageable as a garment, you pick it apart and reuse the yarn.
Sam mentioned something once about acrylic yarn being made out of recycled plastic bottles. This resonates with Steve's make it do or do without lifestyle.
And now there are all these choices and colors and textures. Mohair, finger lashes, acrylic. Yes.
Bucky knows how to darn socks. And Clint knows how to darn socks. Bucky knows how to set up a sniper's blind. And Clint knows how to set up a sniper's blind. Bucky knows what it's like to have someone else unmake you. And Clint knows what it's like when someone else unmakes you. Yet all they can manage during Stitchin' Bitch is a terse... Is Stark bringing the coffee today? Nah, I think it's Bruce to speak for snack. Natasha despairs of them both.
Oh my god, Bucky and Clint should be bros, yes!
Bruce gets the size Q crochet hook and some ultra fluffy acrylic boucle. He's making a throw blanket for the living room couch. The large stitches and quick turnaround time for a project like that is better for his stress levels.
He starts getting stressed out when the stitches are uneven, but Natasha comes over and slides her fingers over what he's got so far and smiles a bit, and he takes a deep breath and keeps going.
Wait, hang on. 2 years ago, we were doing Bruce Natasha?
We were?
That sounds like she slides her fingers.
Oh, I thought that was Bucky.
That's Bruce.
Oh, no, it's Bruce. Oh.
So we Bruce Natasha before Ultron? She slides her fingers.
Oh, God. But Natasha comes over and slides her fingers over what he's got so far and smiles a bit. And he takes a deep breath and keeps going. Steve, annoyingly, is super good at this. Super Soldier Serum increases manual dexterity?
Tony buys Steve a gift basket of the most hideous, scratchy, glittery, novelty 4th of July yarn. It has actual tinsel spun into the strands. Steve hates it. It's everything about the USO shows that made him cringe. The yarn even itches the same as it runs through his fingers. But he can't throw it out!
Soon the Avengers and co. all have sweaters!
Tony gets the itchy glitter sweater and Pepper makes him wear it!
Made out of fancy goat angora, obviously.
As penance!
Someone, maybe Darcy, suggests an ugly sweater party. They start prepping in June.
Well, yeah, it takes a while to make something as big as a sweater.
It's kind of a combo sweater party and Secret Santa. You make a sweater for your person, in secret, and then they have to wear it at the party.
And they have to guess who made it, judging by stitch and pattern.
Here's a Google Doc with everyone's measurements and fiber allergies. Sam is allergic to angora and mohair. Tony recognizes the hideous yarn and can't stop laughing for 15 minutes. Natasha rigged it, so Clint and Bucky get each other.
Sam got Thor. Sam is secretly dismayed by how much yarn he's going to need to make a sweater that has a detachable cape. Because Thor equals cape, obviously.
Obviously. Good thing they have an unlimited supply. Steve stops by the goat farm in upstate New York every other week to pick up some more. Yes, cape, yes! But Thor loves it.
Darcy gets Natasha as her person to make a sweater for. She's not sure if she should go completely over the top, it is supposed to be an ugly sweater party after all, or if she should invest in something really soft and cuddly for Natasha to wear around the house off duty.
I'm just going through this and I'm like, everything about this is so brilliant, I'm so proud of this. Okay. Eventually, she goes halfsies.
In the end, however, Darcy is defeated by the notion of short rows. So she knits two large rectangles of a really soft, really obnoxiously purple yarn, stitches the two rectangles together into a vaguely rectangular shape.
But it's really soft and cuddly, with muted colors, but with Russian obscenities stitched in. She gets Bucky to help her with those.
And writes, "Ponchos are totally coming back this year. Really." On the card.
Either way, Natasha wears it with pride.
Clint is a secret embroidery master. It goes hand in hand with his love of sequins and eyelash yarn.
No, wait. Bucky stitches Russian insults into Clint's sweater.
Clint also endorses Darcy's yarn selection back in June. Natasha finds this unsurprising.
And then picks out the Russian insults with sequins so they are unmissable.
Wait, like Intarsia? Fair Isle? Bucky learns double-sided knitting just for Clint's sweater so it can be insulting and reversible!
Clint can understand spoken Russian, but he's not so great with Cyrillic. And when he appears wearing it, Natasha snorts eggnog all over the rug. Also using Day-Glow yarn. Because secretly, Bucky's kinda evil that way.
Thor asks Loki to help him knit a sweater for Bruce.
And when they all finally own up to their gifts, Steve realizes that Bucky's getting his sense of humor back and has to blink back tears. He makes two!
Bucky has embraced the variety of eye-puking colors that are acrylic yarn.
Because the Hulk deserves a sweater, too! It's fucking gigantic! And also a shade of red that clashes horribly with green.
Tony helped with the sweater for the Hulk. He made Thor some ultra-elastic acrylic yarn in the workshop. It's been a while since SI revolutionized the polymer industry, after all. Bucky also made Steve a pair of socks for Christmas that year. He found a pattern with ribbed cuffs because he remembers the winters when Steve had poor circulation. And they joked that he'd lose a toe to frostbite. Bucky was never really joking. Oh, who does Natasha make a sweater for?
Natasha makes a sweater for Pepper. She cheats. When she fixes up Clint and Bucky, she assigned herself Pepper because she feels she has the best handle on Pepper. And Coulson and Clint are taken. Tony's doing Coulson's because Tony has an idea. Natasha makes Pepper a soft sweater out of finger-weight gray wool, something she can wear just sitting around the house. Pepper's not got a lot of sitting around clothes. She spends so much time on that turning off is hard, and Natasha can appreciate the value of setting clear visual boundaries. It's part of why she changes her hair so much. It makes it easier to separate a new job from the old one. Tony's idea is to make, read, commission, Coulson the most patriotic sweater ever. He later sells the design to the U.S. Olympic team. The Sochi sweater is a modified version of it. It's got stars and spangles and stripes and red, white, and blue and fireworks and a little frieze of Captain America's around the hem.
The thing is, even as they're all entering the many month-long prep period before the first annual Avengers Stitch and Bitch Ugly Sweater Party, TFAASNBUSP on the invites, the group still has other projects to work on at their S&B meetings. The sweaters are supposed to be a surprise, after all, and it's not much of a surprise if everyone sees who's making what. So, the S&B regulars, people like Sam and Tasha and Thor and Jane don't always make it to every meeting, but Bucky and Tony and Steve and Darcy are planted butt first on the living room sofa every week, and Clint is perched on top of the Lazy Boy recliner he somehow colluded with Jarvis to smuggle into the penthouse. Tony long ago realized that even if the tower is 88% his, he barely controls anything that goes on. I have side projects to keep themselves busy. Like Darcy's scarves. She's progressed from basic garter stitch to stocking it! Even if she does count stitches out loud and throws up everyone's count. And Bucky's been trying to learn double-pointed needles. But he also tends to fall into his head if the pattern gets too repetitive. And that leads to what his not-exactly-shield-appointed therapist calls learning moments. But Steve privately calls terrifying. It's like Steve can see the moment Bucky slips away, falls into a memory, falls off that train all over again. For all of Bucky that's present in the room when it happens.
My baby! So, instead of scarves, Bucky does lace. Complicated circular shawls so fine they could pass through a ring. When he finishes the first one, Natasha finds it neatly folded in front of her door.
Intellectually, Steve understands that Bucky's body and mind will heal at their own pace. Shell shock doesn't just fade away, and Bucky's got years more trauma to process than Steve ever did. And even Tony has flare-ups, though the therapist did say there was a technical term for it. But it doesn't mean Steve has to be happy about the nightmares that always follow.
When Natasha holds up the shawl, it takes her a minute or two to work out the design, because it's really complicated. But eventually, she finds a small spider, and then a star, and a hand, and a series of tiny dolls so regular they start to be a little creepy.
When Steve brings it up one night, tentative and braced and wondering if even the mention could send Bucky spiraling again, Bucky says he thinks the lace is more soothing than it is harmful.
Steve has learned not to hide that it worries him, though, because Bucky knows him too well. He knows him too well and will read the worry whether Steve wants him to or not. Steve is still a terrible liar, and it upsets Bucky more when Steve lies and hides stuff from him. Tony's different. Tony doesn't like talking about Afghanistan, though sometimes he throws it in people's faces, in a brittle sort of way. Natasha doesn't talk about her deal at all. Steve does need to talk, though. And Sam refers him to some people with experience talking to veterans. Because even though Steve's experience is very different in specifics, the fact of coming back stateside and finding that everything has changed is not a new one. Bucky isn't good with therapy. Though he'll go, he doesn't always cooperate. But that's okay. He's been bringing his knitting recently. He gives him something to do with his hands. It means he doesn't have to look at the therapist's face. Gives him something else to focus on when he gets overwhelmed. He's been talking more since he started bringing his knitting. His therapist thinks Clint's sweater is inspired.
And the thing is, after Steve brings it up, Bucky tries to make Steve something to prove the knitting is helping more than just his dexterity. Bucky has always looked out for Steve. For him, since the last time he was aware of himself as James Buchanan Barnes. It's been less than a year since he was Steve's strong right arm and impenetrable shield. Seeing Steve worried about him is completely off their old paradigm. And Bucky isn't sure how to deal with that. How to change old behaviors that worked when Steve was small was, for lack of a better word, delicate. Because Steve is bigger than he is now. And sometimes Bucky has nightmares of the lab back in 43 to Steve unstrapping from that table and setting him on his feet again. And Bucky wonders if the last 70 years never happened at all. If Steve isn't really still as manic and chilled and full of the biggest heart the nuns never managed to settle down, safe back in Brooklyn. If he isn't still strapped to that table, hallucinating the whole thing. How the hell is he supposed to tell the shrink that sometimes he doesn't think he's real, though? Bucky's got no idea.
What's the surprise, though, is that he doesn't have to. He doesn't tell his therapist. That would make it too real, too tangible. And he can't tell Steve. And doesn't that hurt, because they've always shared nearly everything, and anything he never shared, he's regretted. But one Sunday morning, he and Clint are on the roof, and Clint says, Bucky doesn't even process what he says, too overwhelmed by knowing he's not the only one. The meaning entirely bypasses words. And the truth is, both of them know they'll never really be free of that thought. It'll come back, late tomorrow night, years from now, in the middle of an op 5 weeks later. But if there are two of them, and Natasha makes a third, then even if it's true, it's only true for one of them. And that's liberating, in a way. Knowing that if the worst is true, there's a two-in-one chance it's not him. So really, you might as well finish these mittens for Steve. They're bright blue, with white stars on the palms. Clint took one look and laughed out loud. Bucky's not sure why he used that design, though part of it was probably perversity and humor. But some of it has to do with Steve's hands, and the way he uses them, and imbues everything he does with himself. Even Bucky. The end.
Of this yarn.
Oh my god, we're brilliant and also horrible. Oh my god.
I like how it falls into canon with also the hammer is his lockpick. The hammer is his penis.
I know! I'd forgotten that that happened.
Goat farm! The goat farm. We wrote this entire thing from 3:10 p.m. until 9:05 p.m.
So, over the course of 6 hours, on a single day.
This entire thing.
A year ago, by the way.
Oh, God. Over a year ago.
Year and a half. Yeah.
Jeez.
And now we bring it to you. So this is, to put it in context, we did this right after soon after Winter Soldier, but way before Ultron came out, which brings up all sorts of other, because...
Bruce Natasha what?
And although, like,
I think it was supposed to be platonic, but I'm really reading it now.
Yeah, now it's like
slides her fingers over his yard. Yep.
Wow. Yeah. As the person who wrote that is not a metaphor I intended. That having been said, fan fiction. Yes. And although, like, I feel like Wanda and Pietro would also, like, get into this.
Oh, God. No, Pietro would have such a hard time with it because it's the kind of thing where when you're learning, you have to go slow.
That's true.
And he doesn't do slow.
Although, on the other hand, wherever Sokovia is, like, clearly it's cold.
It's in the sky.
Yeah.
It's cold.
Now it's in the sky. It didn't start there. Fair enough.
In the sky. It's very cold in those high altitudes.
It is.
Fucking robots.
Yeah. Fucking robots. In case this is unclear, Pietro lives. By the way. He didn't really appear here.
He knits Helen a thank you scarf. Thank you for knitting my organs back together.
Yes. And it says that in the scarf, by the way. That's like knit those words. Are knitted into the scarf. And Helen is like, I can't really wear it. Like, that's kind of weird. Like, where the hell am I going to wear this? And he's like, you never really leave the tower. And she's like, you have a point. Everyone here knows the story. So then she wears it everywhere. And there are non-Avengers people around the tower. Like, there are people who have to bring food and restart the... restart.
Yes.
Oh, man.
There are the people who bring the lazy boy.
But yes. Them too.
The lazy boy delivery people.
And, like, every so often. And, like, bring her new supplies and shit. And she probably has lab assistants. And they see it and are like, what? And she's like, I killed the last lab assistant who messed with me. And then I brought him back to life. And this is how he thanked me.
And suddenly all her interns are terrifyingly polite.
They are. For at least a week. Because, let's be real, they haven't actually gotten this far unless they're all little shits. Yeah. But yes.
It's gonna have to be a shit to live in Avengers Tower.
This is true. Although, she likes him that way, so I guess that works out.
I just had a terrible thought.
Do tell.
The whole bit about... How does he know that he's not still strapped to the lab table hallucinating?
Oh, man. Yes.
What if Poe was still trapped? And the entire second half of the movie is just Kylo Ren trying to get at the map in his brain that's all a hallucination.
Okay, so dear listeners, just a tiny bit more context. This is so we're recording this about 2 weeks after The Force Awakens came out, and we saw it together yesterday. So,
there's a scene where Poe Dameron has been kidnapped. It's like the first hour of the movie.
It's early on,
He's been kidnapped by the First Order, and he's strapped to a table, and Kylo Ren is trying to pull from his brain the map to Luke Skywalker, it is. He wants
to know where the map is, because they haven't, this is before they open it up. And he gets it, by the way.
Yes.
You are horrible. I approve. Okay, so... we need some sort of, like cross-dimensional, like, stitch and bitch of, like, PTSD.
Everything is awful.
Yes.
Everything is awful.
Everything is awful. Just terrible.
You're part of a team.
or even, like, not necessarily he's even strapped there, but he does have that thought. Every so often,
is
of
this
like,
real, or is he still messing with me?
Especially because, by the way, this is no T3, and there's part of him that's like, things have gotten really good. Like, we won. Like, I have these two wonderful, amazing, beautiful human beings in my bed, and like, they think I'm not so terrible. And
well,
they
can't trust it. And he has. It's not just like regular old. I have insecurities. It's I fucking don't trust my entire reality.
And there's a very good reason for that. And there's a certain extent to which no one can look at him and say like, he's not wrong for thinking that. Like, that's a legitimate possibility.
Ooh. Okay, so going back to the whole Kylo Ren is undisciplined and juvenile in his use of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who are good at using the Force can make you want to do things when when you say, like, these are not the droids you were looking for. These are, tell me where the plans are.
You're going to, like, unlock these handcuffs.
Right. So if Kylo Ren was any good at what he was doing, he would have asked nicely instead of trying to break his brain like that.
I had a horrible thought.
Tell me the horrible thought.
Okay, so this is a horrible thought because it's a loving and wonderful OT3 of happiness and joy. But
I think you know where you're going.
Yes, you do, because you know me. But every so often, on a really bad day, he remembers that Rey can use the Force and that Luke has been training her. And one of the things that she's being taught how to do isn't necessarily, it's not to control people. It's not. Because Luke has learned his lesson and Rey desperately doesn't want to learn that lesson oh so badly. But there are a lot of those skills that are cross-transferable.
And she just wants them to be happy.
She just wants him to be happy. And she knows she could do it. And he knows she could do it. And God help us, Finn knows that she could do it. And it's one of those where it's like, you have to trust that the people you love do love you and wouldn't do that. And he does. He really, really does.
But he wakes up from a nightmare and she just wants him to be better. So she makes him forget.
Okay, I wasn't actually going there. I was going with just the self-doubt, but we could do that too. Or not necessarily even she makes him forget, but just like she wants to make him feel better. And it's so hard for both of them to know where the line is between... Like pushing the feeling better and just like making him feel better because she's a person who is cuddling him and whatever.
Ugh, and it's like, would he be self-medicating if he'd gone to the Medroids about, oh, I'm having nightmares, I'm night terrors from this thing?
Okay, here's the other really terrible part. Does him cuddling her count as self-medicating? And neither of them wants to answer this question, by the way. And yeah. Finn is like, the two most important people in my life are going slowly insane. What the fuck do I do?
Blow things up.
That works too.
Where's another Death Star?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that movie 5 will provide, so I'm not particularly worried. Although I feel like he talks to Luke, and Luke is like, I am useless at this shit. By definition.
I kissed my sister that one time.
That one time. And, like, the whole Jedi thing has, like, fundamentally fucked up my life and my family's life and the world and the galaxy. So fundamentally, I am the last person that you should ask. And I don't know why this is what Mark Hamill's voice sounds like in my mind, but we're going with it. And so Finn, but Finn's not a complete idiot. And the other thing about being a stormtrooper is that you're, like, you're taught to follow orders. If you don't know what to do, then you go up the command chain. And he's not really in the command chain. Poe's in the command chain, but he doesn't really have any official place. But he does know who's at the fucking top of the fucking command chain.
And it's not Chewbacca.
It is not Chewbacca. So eventually he asks Leia, and Leia's like, this has fucked up my family so fucking badly, but I'm not. And so, but she has the exact opposite reaction to Luke. Luke's reaction is like, I'm not going to get involved because everything I touch dies. And Leia's reaction is, I need, like, this has fucked up my family so badly, I need to prevent it from fucking up anything else. So she goes and talks to all three of them separately, and then makes sure that there's some really good therapists in the Resistance. And, like,
the thing is, the only answer you can really have in this situation is you have to trust your partner. You have to trust Rey. And most of the time, it's not a problem for Poe.
But, like, yeah, in the middle of the night.
When he's doubting whether or not he ever left that freaking
chair.
Yes. Oh, babies.
Because, like, yeah, like, he just kept screaming in the chair. And then he wakes up screaming. And it's like, he can't tell.
Oh, like, babies.
He really can't.
Babies.
But after a while, I feel like his solution would actually be. He probably, okay, so let's be clear. I feel like his solution would be similar to Bucky's. I think he'd get there a lot sooner. because Bucky's kind of oblivious and not, I was going to say dumb, which isn't actually the word I'm going for, but, like, oblivious and, like, doesn't want to think about this shit. Whereas I feel like if Poe sees something that he, like, doesn't want to, like, deal with, I think he probably faces it head on and is like, I don't want to deal with this, therefore I should deal with it because pilots. So he does, and I feel like he would come to a fairly similar solution of just like, you know what, there's no way of knowing, but the only thing I can do is act as if I know what the answer is, and the answer is that this is the real world, that I'm not still stuck there, because if I'm still stuck there, I'll go crazy, and I don't actually know, but I'll pretend.
And then we cut to Kylo Ren striding out the corridor.
Oh my
god.
The
back of Poe's head sticking out the top of the chair, and the whole thing is a giant hallucination. Which means Han's still alive.
It does not make it better! It doesn't make it better!
I like my AU's hurdy and dollhouse-ish.
Yes, you do! And I dollhouse. Like them hurdy too, but I want them to end happy!
Okay, fine. He's still in the chair, and then Rey and Poe and Finn are all happy in guess, the hallucination, yeah. And he dives into the hallucination and stays there, thinking,
I can't.
No, it is, because he thinks, I can't give Kylo Ren the answer if I'm, like, actively fighting him, and I'm gonna move on into this hallucination and stay here.
Okay, so you're going with the answer that, like, the audience knows which one's real.
Yes.
Okay, see, I was going with the answer that we don't know which one's real. Like, I mean, people go back and forth on, like, whether people know whether the, like, answer in Inception is real or not. But I was going with the, like, we don't know.
Okay.
But he chooses, he chooses a side.
Okay.
And that, like, that's as happy an ending as you're going to get. Oh, my God, this got super dark. Oh, my God. Where's the we both like fluff.
I know.
How did this happen?
The movie's just really dark all of a sudden.
It is. I mean, yeah.
Hey, he has a robot for a pet.
He does. And
shaped like a soccer ball.
OT3 fluff. Well,
BB.
Here's the other thing, though. If he is still stuck in the chair and it is all hallucination, it's a hallucination of him getting rescued and ending up with two gorgeous, beautiful people
who are great in his bed.
Yeah. So, actually, that doesn't actually make it a sad ending, because there's a certain extent to which he can be like, well, he's still being tortured, but on the plus side, he hasn't actually lost his mind, and it's a pretty damn great hallucination, so, you know.
I'm just going to stay here.
And for all we know, it could be recursive, in that he is hallucinating himself being rescued, and then he does get rescued. We could actually run with it that way. Oh my god, that would really make everyone go crazy.
Yay!
If has anyone listened this far, of like, it started with Bucky stitching bitch. Are we going to do this as a single file?
I don't know. Maybe. Because we hate people?
Maybe. What if we did, like, could do it like as three files, like one, and then both.
Okay. That works.
Because I feel like people who want the Bucky stitching bitch don't necessarily want an extra, like, 20 minutes of, like, of Star trauma. Wars pain. Because that's what all this is. Let's be clear.
It's trauma.
Star Wars pain. and yes.